thank you very much for that introduction. I mean, it was totally exaggerated, but it sounded very good. Well, it may be true, at least some of it. But it's brilliant. And thank you to Rory and Mel. Thank you so much for having me here. And good morning to you, 3CI. Goeiemôre, mense van die Here. Dis 'n groot voorreg om hier saam met julle te kerk toe te kom. Yeah, I'll hold it a little closer. I'm scared I might pass germs to you. So it's a great privilege to be here. You know, we've traveled with Israel around all the world. And you can always tell a church in which the favor of God is resting. And you tell it by the space they create to allow a disruptions in the services. And wasn't that an amazing prophetic song? I mean, it was just extraordinary. And I think there was a message for us in that song. And before I go on, I want to remind us, the words that you say about yourself, you know, I am who he says I am, not who I tell myself. And it's very important this morning. You create space for God. And as Rory has created space for God to move in this church, so create space in your own life right now. Because we believe that this is an encounter with God. I believe the Spirit of God is here with us. And it's no coincidence that we have that word to start and a signal from the Lord that he is with us. And so it is a great pleasure for me to be with you. With you because I want to talk to you about a simple message. And a simple message is this. What is your core story? I wrote a book called Know Your Why, in order to help people find their purpose and fulfill their purpose in life. It's probably the most difficult thing that an entire generation will find, is to how to fulfill your purpose, how to fulfill God's call on your life. And the bravest thing that you will ever do is to own your core story. And this is a church that has a core story. It's great to be here on your 21st birthday, yeah. But it hasn't gone anywhere near where you're going to be. Why? Because you've got a core story. And a core story is that which makes you who you are. The core story of your life and my life is it makes me who I am. And a core story is like the operating system of a computer. You don't know it's there, but if it weren't there, it couldn't work. And that's what I so love about hearing all that I hear about you, because I believe that within each one of you, there is a song waiting to be sung, an idea waiting to come out, a word waiting to be spoken, a deal waiting to be done, because there is no distinction between what we do on Sunday and what we do on Monday. And there is an aspiration longing to be fulfilled and a hope longing to be accomplished. And that is there by the Spirit of the living God. This is not some self-help theory. This is not something that I'm telling you to make you feel good. This is what the Spirit of God has put into each one of our lives. And I want to read to you from the first Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion until the day of the Lord. Now he has brought here, if you let me translate it, he who has started a story in you 21 years ago, 6 years ago, will tell the story until it is completed. He will not stop midway. Why would he? Because our lives are a story. Our core story is our life. It is where you start. And it is a story. It's not just a sentence. It's not a paragraph. It's not a chapter. It's a whole story. Ups and downs. I don't know where you come from in this church today. Maybe you've been hit by a deep addiction and you can't kick it. Maybe you've been in a workplace that has just driven you to distraction. Maybe it is that you keep thinking that other voice that we're trying to stop keeps saying you, I'm not good enough. Not good enough. Why am I? I'm not good enough. Now, you know, I believe I often look at the advertisements, because I think, as Jesus told us, the people of the world are sometimes quite brighter than we are. And if you look at one of the most important brands in the world, now I don't want to make a pitch for Coca-Cola, but their latest advertisements, which you'll see all over, is Better Together. Better Together. Now, they would have spent probably $100 million on those two words. At least. Because they have discerned something in the world. Better Together. And this is a great testimony of this church, that is not a whole bunch of individuals that come together here, but because you are better together, because the Spirit of God is doing something new in your heart and new in your church. And long may that be, that people come here, whatever the backgrounds are, and feel a sense of real belonging. I'm part of this being better together. Because this world in which we're living is filled with such uncertainty and such hopelessness and such difficulty and such even financial issues that are facing us, that unless we're together, unless we discover to being a community and allow God to develop the story that He's developing in our lives, we're lost. And that is something we must never allow for. I'm not good enough. Here's another advertisement. You'll recognize immediately the key character. Why don't we just show you this video clip?
This is a dream race we're about to witness. The most incredible lineup ever. In lane one is Jesse Owens, the world record holder of 1936. That's Calvin Smith. He's in lane seven. In lane six, Carl Lewis, the greatest athlete of the 20th century. Leroy Burrell is in lane two. 9.85 is his world record time. In lane three is Maurice Greene. Lane five, Asafa Powell, the history maker. And there's the great man, Usain Bolt, still the world record holder at 9.58 seconds.
A lot of legends have come before me. This is my time. But I know there will be another. And that's the way it should be. Because good enough will never change the world.
This is your time. This is your time as an individual. This is your time as a church. Because good enough never changes the world. We will never be good enough. There isn't anyone here who is good enough. But in Jesus Christ, we are good enough. We are good enough in our workplaces. We are good enough in our homes, in our schools, in our universities. We are good enough in our gyms. We're good enough when we're talking to people. Why? Because the living God, Jesus Christ, lives within us. Isn't that amazing? So don't say, I'm not good enough. Because good enough doesn't change the world. But good enough in Jesus Christ with the power of the Spirit of God and better together, then we can change this community, this church, this city, and I dare to believe this country. Isn't that amazing? He's writing a core story in your life. But you know, we can have a choice. You can either live by the premises of the world or the promises of the word. Which is it going to be? See, the premises of the world, and I don't have to tell you, and you don't have to tell me. It's a stressful place out there. It's a stressful place. You know, when I wrote a book called God at Work, which if you're in the workplace, I commend you to buy and read. I thought that stress was something that just happened. You know, school teachers marking at an exam and it has to get it done. It's stressful. But I now realize that stress is with us 24/7. We've got always on because this little fella goes with you all the way. He doesn't switch off. And if you've got 24/7 stress, you're going to have a 24/7 remedy for that stress, because we are a generation living between broadband and burnout. And we have to stop that. because we need to learn not to grasp or to grab or to be greedy, which are the premises of the world, but to be give and to be generous and gracious, which are the promises of the word. And that works every day in your life, and it works in my life. But if you want to know how your life should run, there are four words that will change your life as it changed my life. There are four words with which the Old Testament starts, and four words with which the New Testament, at least in Greek, starts. Which is, and you know it very well, in the beginning, God. Do you want to say it again? In the beginning, God. So stop. Reboot, rewind, go back to God. If you're in a screwed up life right now and you don't quite know how you can manage the next day, stop. Because it's in the beginning, God. And he begins the story of your life when you come to Christ, you come to faith, you see the power of the Spirit of the living God. He makes something new. He makes all things new. But it is in the beginning, God, not in the beginning some self-help book. Nothing wrong with a self-help book or your friends. Because sometimes you live in your core story with some horrible voice that we hope we've killed, but which I come back to again, which is your school teacher might have said to you, you're no good. You're never going to succeed. You're useless. You're a waste. Or one of your friends at work says, you're not up to it. And you kind of think, I am not up to it. But I am who he says I am, not who someone else says I am. And we live in a noisy world. And if you want to hear God's voice in a noisy world, you need to take steps to hear his voice. You need to switch this off sometimes. Take a fast for a period of time. I'm giving you great advice. I don't apply it to myself, but I'd like to. And when you're in the workplace, remember this, that my workstation is my worship station. Where I work is where I am worshiping. If you are a software computer writer, when you write the software well, you are striking a truth blow. You are striking a way for God to say, yeah, that's good. And when we lift good up, when you're a teacher and you're teaching well, if you're a marketing executive and you're selling something, you're not writing a lawyer's document, you're writing a sales document. But if the sales document accurately reflects your product, then the Spirit of God is running with you, running with your business, running with the flow of your life. So we need to say to, I'm going to ask you the question, why do you do what you do? Why do you do what you do? Do you do it for cash? Nothing wrong with that. I did and do. Do you do it for a career? I want to be the head school teacher. Nothing wrong with that. Do you do it for a great cause? You give up a job and come and work in this amazing church or in a voluntary organization? Nothing wrong with that. But I tell you one thing, unless you know that you are called to where you are, then whether it's for cash or for a career or for a cause, you will burn out. And burnout is the greatest disease of our age, beyond any doubt. Mental illness throughout the world. Because we are not made, we're not wired to live this 24/7 life that the world demands of us. But don't take my word for it. When you talk about calling, take the words of Jesus. And let us look at John chapter 15. Verse 16. Here's the brilliant bit. You did not choose me. You may think you've come to church today. I've often thought that. I mean, I've made a choice. I've made a decision for him. But do you know what? You didn't choose him. What does he say? But I, Jesus, chose you. I chose you. You feeling small and low and having voices in your head today. I chose you. But there's no point in just being chosen. What he goes on to say, and I appointed, that's simply a word that means invested. I made an investment in you. It's a technical word. And when you make an investment, you make it for the long term. You don't buy a house in order to sell it tomorrow. You buy it for a long term, not unless the market's very hot. And even then, you shouldn't. and I invested in you. Let me illustrate it. I came here feeling very, until yesterday, sort of 5 o'clock South African time, because our rugby team, and I'm not that much of a plasty RPS to be supporting South Africa when you play England, and we beat you by 1 point, which was great, and I felt very good. Until yesterday, when the All Blacks, wrongly, with a line judge from South Africa, crooked us, as they say. And they crooked us, and we lost by 1 point. So,
welcome to the club.
Yeah, you know, don't celebrate victories too soon, but we'll see you in Japan. But imagine this. You're invited to play for the, let's say, the South African rugby team rather than the English one. And they say, you're chosen. You say, yeah, I'm chosen. Fantastic. But then they say there's no gym. There's no dietary advice. There's no place for training. There's no physical trainer. And there's no money. We say, well, what's the point of being chosen? But what Jesus says is, I chose you and I invested in you. I gave you everything you need to fulfill what I chose you to do. Everything. There is nothing that you lack. To be a teacher, to be an accountant, to be a lawyer, to work in a church. Nothing that you lack. To be a mum looking after children. A student. Nothing that you lack. I've invested in you. Why? Why? Every time you make an investment, you want to know, why have I made this investment? So that you might go. Now, there is no part of the Christian faith is we'll sit back, we'll wait for nirvana, something nice might turn up, it might not. What I love about this church's core story is you guys go, you're doing things. You're wanting to bring people to know and understand the power of Jesus Christ to change a life. I mean, that's it, it's to change a life. But you go, you don't sit back. So that you might go and do what? To bear fruit. But a special kind of fruit. Not nice lychees and mangoes, which I long for when I'm not here. But fruit that lasts. And I'd love a sort of lychee and a mango now. But it's the wrong season. But the fruit that lasts. You know, we know about sustainable economics, sustainable energy, sustainable environment. And Jesus says, I want to give you fruit that lasts, sustainable fruit. Not just staying here for, you know, a few years, but continuing in your journey, in your story as it unfolds, chapter by chapter, day by day, in the tough life that we're living. You know, I know what it's like to live under harsh commercial compromises in the workplace. So do you. It's tough. As they say, it's not for sissies. But He is with us in all that we're doing. And if you know your why, you will flourish in the life that you are made for. If you don't know your why, you will flounder. If you know your why, you will find your way. And if you don't know your why, everything else will get in the way. That is the truth. You think of Elon Musk, who you mentioned earlier on. Now, if he didn't know that he wanted to make those cars, he would have had everything going wrong, and everything seems to be going wrong, and still he goes on because he knows his why. And you know your why as a church, to bring others to know and understand what it's like to being together is better. Do you know your why as an individual? You know, Jesus, it's very interesting. When Jesus' first words are really important. I remember being absolutely in tears when Nelson Mandela came out of prison and made his first speech, and was my great privilege to meet him and to be a trustee of the Mandela Children's Fund. Everybody was waiting for those first words. What would he say? And his first words were, I give to you the people to serve you, to serve you. Now, Jesus' first words, curiously, in John's Gospel, John chapter 1 and verse 37, Jesus comes with a question. His first words are a question. And that question is addressed to you right now as it is to me. Now, you would have thought that his first words would have been, "We're ready to go. The kingdom of God is here. We're on our way. Let's go. Let's form the disciples. Let's form the group. Let's take the country." What was his first words? It was a question. What do you want? What do you want? And if he's asking you this question now, what do you want? What would you say? Not, "I want a new car, a new house," or whatever. What is it that makes you you? What is it that makes you the essential story that you're longing to tell, but you've never been able to? You've never had the confidence or the courage or the finances or the hope or the people around you. What do you want? I'm going to give you a minute, maybe less, just for a moment. Only allowed old tweets, 140 characters. What will it be? Just put a blank in there right now. And you believe the Spirit of God will answer right now. Just the question, what do you want? Now, how do you achieve it? Well, some may say, do you know what? Willpower. That's all you need. You need willpower. I am who I am. My willpower is going to get me there. This is my identity. Take it, leave it. I'll shape my life. I'm Invictus. I'm captain of my soul. I know what I'm doing. Seconds out. Others will say, whatever. Whatever. You know the expression. It's a kind of fatalism. God will do what God will do as long as I don't get in the way. Well, it'll happen. It's a sort of passive que sera, sera. We'll just drift along. And some say, "Wow, you know what? They're just wannabes. You know, I want to build a really good business. But hey, I don't want to go to night school. I don't really want to study. I'm just a wannabe, just a daydream believer." If you write your core story through your willpower, you will burn out. If you write your core story through your being whatever, yeah, whatever the way the ball bounces, you will drop out. And if you write your core story in just a wannabe dreamer, you will fade out. Is that what you want to do? To burn out, to drop out, to fade out? I don't think so. Because it's in worship that we break out. Worship breaks out. It breaks the pain of addiction. It breaks the ways of our lives. It breaks the memories of all the stuff I've screwed up over, of all the memories of the my parents. And I speak to you now, if you've got a relationship that's broken, in the name of Jesus, take the breakout route. Take the route of worship. When we worship, and worship is not just how we brilliantly had sung here and sung with our amazing group that you've got here. Worship shouldn't just be trapped in the guitar case of a contemporary worshiper. Worship is what you and I do every day of our lives. My workstation is my worship station. When you give generously to this church, you know, Rory cannot run this church on his own. Why is this church what it is? Because you've given your time, you've given your energy, and you've given your money to what you believe in. Isn't that right? And we learn that in worship. When my will is aligned to his will, worship releases your core story. And do you know what happens is that in worship, God himself by his Spirit reminds us that he's co-writing the story of your life. He's a co-writer. We're not doing it alone. I'm not trying to pull myself out of a failed business, of a failed marriage, of a failed relationship, of a failed ability to stop watching pornography or taking drugs or drinking too much. And shall I tell you one other thing? Very often, preachers, myself included, we get quite pessimistic and try and talk about just how bad everything is. But I want to tell you this. If you're here today and life is just great, it's wonderful, the sun is shining, business is doing well, kids aren't in rebellion, enough food and home, life's good, golf handicaps come down, just good. I want to tell you this, he makes the good better. In the marriage feast in Cana, his first miracle, he went to a party where half the people were drunk. What did he do? Give them more wine. I'll ask Rory to explain all that. But that's what happened. That's what happened. And not only some cheap wine in our days 50 years ago. You know, it's 50 years that I left school here. It was called Umtas. I don't know what it's called now. Cheap stuff. People are laughing. I think you know about it. And it gave you a fearful headache. But it was cheap. And now I'm reduced to Clippies and Coke. Coca-Cola. Not the other stuff. God, you are slow. You are slow. Because you see, the world around us wants to distract us. And so we need to come in times of worship, create space. That's what I love about this church. If you ask me, when anybody asks me, what was the church like? They create space for God. You create space for God, I promise you, you will not be disappointed. He'll fill that space. You don't create space for God? I've got some news for you. I've got some other friend, not a good friend, a terrible friend, a horrible man, who's going to try and fill it for you. We need to learn this, that passion of its own doesn't work. I mean, people say to me, I'm passionate about that. Yes, so am I. You know, I'm passionate about Biltong if I can get it. You know, I'm passionate about rugby. So what? Passion of itself does not bring perseverance. Only in the Spirit of God can we have the energy to survive the toughness of this world, the difficulties we're facing, and the joy that comes with it. If you're enjoying Him, He makes the good better. He's here to give us more than we could ever live or imagine, which is why you'll never beat God on the upside. You try Him today. Be generous in your giving. I promise you, you will never beat Him. He will always, always come through for you. Maybe not immediately, because God isn't Google. He doesn't just answer whenever I want to have Him answer. But we want dreams. We need to dream. And the dreams of the self, when I'm just dreaming it of my own, dreams inspired by the self are unsustainable, because Monday morning comes. I mean, I'm dreaming at the weekend, and then it all just fizzles out. But dreams that are inspired by the Spirit are unbeatable, because it is the energy of the Spirit of the living God co-writing a story with you. Just remember, you know, we all have a past. Don't be tripped by the past, but be gripped by the future, gripped by what the potential is that God could do with you, or better together, can do with the church as a whole. But you say to me, yeah, can I get that? I get the gig. But what happens when I fail? I've got everything falling out now. What happens when I fail? I want to tell you, we need to learn to fail well. Because even in your core story, you're going to fail. I started a business with a few friends. Probably the most, key guys in the City of London. And we got the market wrong. Everybody said we'd succeed, but we didn't. And the business failed. It was very painful. It still is. But I beg you, never say, I am a failure. Because if you say that I am a failure, it would mean that Jesus Christ has to fail in you. And Jesus Christ is not in the business of failing. I might have failed in a project. Sadly, I might have failed in a relationship. I might have failed in a transaction, but I am not a failure. So important to remember that. And then three things I learned, which you might find helpful. One, do learn. Learn from what went wrong. Learn. Write it down. Talk to someone you trust. Second, don't linger. Don't run the tapes over and over in your head. If you're anything like me, you keep running them. But it's not going to change the fact it was a failure. And what am I doing by just running the tapes? But remember this. Remember this. That if you don't learn, you won't learn for the next time. If you keep lingering, it's just going to eat you up. And then just lean forward. And I say lean forward not because I'm a self-help teacher. I say lean forward because Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Tomorrow is filled with hope because Jesus rose again. That's the energy and the same power that rose Jesus from the dead is available to you and me when we screw up, when we make a mistake, when we fail. And when with disappointment hits you, I know there are people here today, you know the intensity of an acute disappointment, perhaps happened just this week. I want to tell you, he's there to lift you up. Let me give you an illustration. You know, in Japan, they would if you break something, they would never throw it away. Because they say it's a history, it's a story. And if I break a vase at home, I grab it, wrap it up in paper and put it in the bins and my wife can't see what I've broken. But they would never do it in Japan because they say it was given to me at my wedding. Or, you know, it's a friend gave it to me. And they would put it together. And in its supreme form, it's an art form and it's called kintsugi. Have a look at this bowl. Do you see that bowl? That bowl was broken. And in its art form, they filled it up. But what do you notice about it? It's not with glue, but with gold. And I believe that the Spirit of God says to you, if you're here today and acute disappointment has hit you, if financial troubles have smacked you and you feel crashed, that bowl is broken. There's no point in pretending it's not. It is. It's broken at your feet. And it's in shatters. Then what he says to you is that the Spirit of God picks it up and puts it together, not with glue, but with gold, such that it becomes stronger and more beautiful at the very place where the break occurred. At the very weakest point, it becomes stronger. At the very point when you thought you were most distressed, most lost, most disappointed, most taken aback, at that very point, it becomes gold. And then the whole thing looks beautiful. Do you know that you look beautiful to God even when you're crashed out? Do you know that? Well, I'm here to tell you it is true. He makes all things reusable, recyclable, new. But you know, you can't do it on your own. You need to have an instinctive sense of God with you and know that in a moment you've got to act and you've got to act for someone else. Let me tell you a story. We have in England the two Brownlee brothers who are the great triathlon runners, and they're fiercely competitive. And Ali Brownlee won the gold medal in the Rio Olympics. And he was going for the World Cup, the World Championship, which would have made him the world champion of the world, competing with his brother. And this is what happened.
It's me. This is a horrible sight. Jonathan Brownlee has lost it now and has staggered to a stop at the side of the course, and Alistair's stopped to help him along. And Alistair is going to try and carry his brother home. Dramatic scenes in Cozumel as the Olympic champion carries his younger brother towards the podium.
Oh my God, I cannot believe what we are seeing here, Matt. Is this allowed? Is he allowed to help his brother? You know, is that part of the rules? I'm not too sure. We've never seen anything like this before.
Unbelievable scenes. Unbelievable scenes in Cozumel. To finish in second and third, but Johnny can hardly stand. And Alistair is having to drag him across the line and pushing him home for second. Johnny finishes in second.
Of course, you saw the South African streaking ahead. Can you just get it back? It's lost its... Well, I won't make the point. It's obvious. Take a chance. But you know what? The interesting thing is that it was instinctive. He didn't start asking questions. Well, is it a good idea? Is it the rules? He didn't. His brother was in trouble. And you know, Jesus Christ does that. You know, he takes us when we're in trouble. He takes us when you know, there was not enough oxygen, which is what was happening there. He takes us when we don't have enough the oxygen of life, not enough of the strength to live. He takes us, puts his arm around us. Now, do you know what? I think I would have done the same. If my brother had been in trouble, I'd have put my arm around him and I'd have got there, wouldn't you? You'd do it, wouldn't you? But when I got to the line, I'd have turned around and said, Brood, you know what? It's the world championship. You're going to lose anyway. Do you mind? I'll just breast it and win it. But he didn't. He pushed his brother ahead of him. And Jesus Christ preferred you and me. And he went ahead of us so that we might qualify for the world championship of being part of his sons and daughters, which we heard so amazingly in that prophetic word early on. You know, we're not living just for a break even. I don't know if you've got your finances anything like mine sometimes. You get to the end of the month and it's just the cash coming in is just enough and is usually just a bit of the expenses going. We're living for the breakout, aren't we? That in worship we break out. And we break out. That's our core story. Our core story is we don't want to burn out. We don't want to fade out. We don't want to just drop out. We want to break out. That's what we want to do. Now, if the worship group will join us again, I want to tell you a story with which I want to end. And then I want to say something, perhaps. You know, in England, we don't have as great weather as you would have here. So we have to have it raining all through the rugby match. That's how we play at times. And if you want to grow something, you've got to grow it in a greenhouse. And in Kent, there was a family that had a greenhouse. And the greenhouse had, you know, tomatoes and vegetables and flowers that were growing. And in the corner of the greenhouse was an agave plant. Does anybody know what an agave plant is? All the tequila drinkers are putting their hands up. It's the source of tequila. And it was totally neglected for 40 years, just in the corner. And then last year, in the space of 40 days, this is what happened. Let's look at that picture. We'll do a close-up. Within 40 days, that plant started growing. And when it got to the ceiling, it didn't say, oh, ceiling, there's an opposition, there's a difficulty, there's something I can't do, I'm going to turn around and grow down. It didn't do that. What did it do? It burst through the ceiling. And it continued to grow. Why? Because that was its time. when good enough wasn't just going to be turning back. It was in the power of the DNA within that that agave plant. And you know where I'm going with this, because there is no ceiling. There is no stopper. There is no lid that can hold back the Spirit of God working in your life. He will not take that opposition. If you know your why, you will break through. You will break out of that ceiling. And I'm not making this just to be cheerful. I'm telling you this why. Because there was a man. His name was Jesus. And he was locked up in a tomb like that greenhouse. And he broke the seal just as it was breaking the ceiling. And we prayed earlier about breaking the ceiling. And that's what is going to happen. And I'm asking you now to yourself, is it your family, your friends, your finances, forgiveness, your future? What is it that's holding back the ceiling, that's stopping you, that's the cork that's in the bottle? And for you as a church, what is it? Now, I'll tell you this, and I want to read it to you, a word that I believe that you are going to break out and break out of this ceiling, of this tent. It comes from Isaiah chapter 54, verse 2. I'm going to try and read it to you in English and Afrikaans, just so that you will remember this. Let's try the Afrikaans. Don't laugh. Maak groter die plek vir jou tent. Maak breër jou tentdoeke. Moenie suinig daarmee werk nie. Maak langer die tentlyne en slaan die tentpenne dieper in, want jy sal na alle kante toe uitbrei. Jou nageslag sal nasies verdryf, en in die stede wat nou verwoes is gaan woon, moenie bang wees nie. In English, enlarge the place of your tent. Stretch your tent curtains wide. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords. Strengthen your stakes, for you will spread out to the right and to the left, and your descendants will dispossess nations and settle in their desolate cities. I believe this is a word for you today, and I want to underline this. I'm going to ask you to stand. And I'm going to ask the worship group to lead us in a song of praise and worship. But I want you, as a sign of just to that, coming back to that that advertisement from that unknown drinks company, better together. And in order to show that we are better together, I'm going to ask you to clap. And to clap in time together as one church. And as you do that, I'll ask you to look to your right and to look to your left and to say, those tent flaps are gone. Because something new is coming in this place. That ceiling cannot hold back what the Spirit of God is doing in this place, in your life, in the place.